Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, back to Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
7:03. At 7:30, we're going to talk with former NFL Executive of the Year, Jeff Diamond. He was the gentleman quoted in that SB Nation report on the 49ers, the four things that have the 49ers in their current state. So Jeff Diamond's going to talk football, someone that Lowe knows real well. He's coming up at 7:30. This weekend, Sonoma Raceway, the Toyota Save Mart 350. This is something you can get on tickets starting at just $49. And you can get tickets right now at SonomaRaceway.com or just simply by calling 800-870-RACE, 1-800-870-RACE for your tickets. Our next guest is a three-time NASCAR Series Cup champion and one of the very best drivers of all time. Now you can see him as the lead analyst for NASCAR on Fox. Darrell Waltrip joins Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
Green flags in the air. Buggity, buggity, buggity. Let's go racing, boys.
Love that. Darrell, good morning. Great to have you on the show, my man.
Yeah, see, that's the way to start the day right there, brother. You got to get that boogity, boogity, boogity thing going in. That'll get you cranked up.
Well, now that I've got that, I think I'm going to use that sound for my alarm clock every morning. How would I feel at 3 a.m. with that thing going off? Pretty good, right?
Well, it works to start a race, and I'm sure it would start your day off with, you know, the best start you ever had in your life.
Hey, Darrell, this race, a lot of NASCAR fans out here, but what is it about the Sonoma trip that you enjoy the most?
You know, Northern California is so beautiful. For so many years, you know, we raced down around L.A., Ontario and Riverside, and now over in Fontana. And so that's always been my sort of perception of what California was like, the Los Angeles area, which, you know, all the smog and everything is kind of affiliated with that. And then when we came up here, you know, into wine country and the beautiful mountains and the grass is green, and it's just a totally different, you think you're in another part of the world. And I've always just loved coming up here. And my wife and I love coming here. We stay out here in Sonoma. And, of course, the racetrack is phenomenal. Just a beautiful road course laid in the side of them, you know, kind of a mountain. I guess you call it a mountain, a hill, whatever they call it out there. But it's a beautiful facility, a lot of history. Just a fun trip for us to come out here this time of year and enjoy not just some good racing, but, all the wine and things that go with it.
Hey, Darrell, what's your take on the road courses? And as a driver, what is it that makes those so difficult, so challenging?
Well, you know, it's changed a lot through the years. It's sort of in my era, back in the 70s, 80s, even the 90s. We just didn't have the proper equipment. We didn't put a lot of effort into road racing. We only did one road race a year for a long time, and now we do Watkins Glen, so we got a couple on the schedule. But if you think two races out of 36, how much effort do you put into that? But what's really helped is the chase. Winning, you're in, and so that's helped some guys like A.J. Allmendinger, who, won Watkins Glen. And that got him in the chase. So I think there's a bigger emphasis on road racing there's ever been before. And quite honestly, the equipment is top notch now. I mean, the gearboxes that we use are specifically for road racing. The brake package, the car itself is designed and built for road racing. And so where we used to put very little effort into coming to a road course, just go and get it done. Now the guys really, really focus hard on trying to come here and win these races. And the road racing over the last, 5 or 6 years has been phenomenal. We've seen some of the best racing on road courses that we see anywhere.
Darrell, when you're talking about road racing and the different things that go into it, the little nuances of it, how about just the weather and what kind of tires? You got to heat those old boys up. But when you're racing in California compared to a dry area or back east, and does the car handle different? Do you have to drive a little bit more cautious when depending on the weather?
Weather, anytime it's hot, and it's supposed to be hot here this weekend, extremely hot, that affects grip. how much grip the car is going to have, which is directly related to the tires. But the tire that Goodyear runs at Sonoma and on the road course is designed, again, specifically for a road course. It's the only place they run the tires that we will race here on this track. They're real soft, so they get a lot of grip, a lot of forward bite, a lot of traction. The biggest thing weather does to us, our cars are hot. And so when you're working around this road course out here, 11 turns, you're working your butt off. I mean, you're left, right, shifting gears, braking. It takes a lot of focus, a lot of concentration. Then you throw in a high ambient temperature, and it's very physically demanding. I can remember being as tired getting out of the car here as I would be if I'd run 500 laps at Bristol or somewhere. So very physically demanding, and you throw in the heat, makes the car not have as much grip, doesn't handle quite as good, takes a lot more effort, and really wears the old driver down. So that's the biggest effect it'll have here Sunday. The cars will slip and slide a little bit more, and then the driver will be used up when it's over with.
NASCAR legend Darrell Waltrip joining Chad, Joe, and Lowe here on 95.7 The Game. Darrell, last week we spent some time on the show talking about O.J. Simpson with ESPN releasing that documentary series, the five-part series, and everything that happened, you know, 20-plus years ago. But to relive all of this, for those of us who watched this court case play out, it just was fascinating to see some of the things that we never knew before. I wanted to ask, you made a living trying to go faster than everybody else. Did it surprise you or make you rethink your strategy to see OJ on the highway going slow yet evading police?
Now, I got to tell you, that may be the oddest question anyone has ever asked me about racing. It's kind of hard to go fast out here on all the roads I've been on because there's so much traffic. So I hate driving in traffic. I hate driving on the highway. When you're a race car driver, a professional race car driver, obviously people they're not professionals, and so therefore they don't drive like professionals, and therefore it's annoying and they get aggravated, and you'd like to put the bumper to some of them, you know, and move them out of the way. But anyway. I'm not going to be riding around in a white Bronco anytime soon. So, I don't know. Driving on a highway is a challenge for most race car drivers because they're always impatient and in a hurry. And there's seven or eight lanes and, you know, you're boxed in, you can't go anywhere. And that's frustrating. So, I just as soon take a helicopter or an airplane myself.
Just between you and us and a couple hundred thousand listeners, what's the fastest you've ever gotten up to on the freeway?
Oh, on the freeway? Well, I have a Corvette. I did about 160 for a brief period of time. I don't recommend that. I had a passenger with me that wanted to know how fast the car was going. I said, I don't really have any idea. Let's find out. So, so I gassed her up a little bit. But I wouldn't, you know, I don't recommend doing that.
No, of course not. Of course not. We're not advocating anything.
I'm a law-abiding citizen.
Yes.
I stay within the speed
sure you are.
And reasonably within the speed limit.
We're talking with NASCAR legend Darrell Waltrip with Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Darrell, one of our listeners, Sean, has reached out to me on Twitter. He wanted me to ask you this. How many of the teams use different drivers at the Sonoma Raceway?
How many? Say that again.
How many teams use different drivers at Sonoma Raceway?
I think he's probably talking about what we used to call road course ringers. Hardly any anymore. Our drivers have gotten to be so good at the road racing, and the equipment is, as I said, is top notch. We don't have any real road race ringers come in and want to do a one-off race anymore. I think there may be one guy, I can't remember, maybe Patrick Papartier or somebody like that. I can't remember, but we only have one kind of outsider coming in this weekend. And again, it's because of the chase and the way our series is set up these days. And quite honestly, people always talk about road course ringers and what if somebody brings in a hot shot like that to drive the car for one race. You know how many times a road course ringer has won one of our races?
Probably none.
Once.
Yeah.
And you know when it was?
When's that?
In the 60s.
Wow.
So, you know, as fun as that may sound and And some people may think, why don't they get some road course specialist to run one of these race cars? It just takes too long for any driver, I don't care if you're Formula One or Indy car or where you come from, to acclimate yourself to our cars, our race procedures, and how the races, how we run these races. It just takes too long, and one-offs just don't work anymore.
Hey, Darryl, I'm an ex-ball player, played there in Nashville, Tennessee, played there in New Orleans, really hot and humid, you know, and ex-wrestler, so lost about 10 pounds in a day before. What's a hot, you're talking about how hot it gets in these cars. How many pounds do you ever lose in a, you know, in a race, and how much, you guys, you've heard, guys, how much loss up to how much weight?
Well, a big guy like you might lose quite a bit, but, you know, a small bit. These drivers, I tell you, these guys today, they blow my mind. You know, I always like to say we had wine for dinner, and these guys have wine with dinner. And so it's a totally different training. They got trainers. They watch what they eat. They run. They work out. They have physical fitness programs. Every team does, for not just the drivers but the crew members. These guys are fit, and so you're going to, in a hard race like this on Sunday, a good fit race car driver probably lose 6-8 pounds max. That'd be the most. But wow. Now if you're a big chubby guy and you don't work out much, you got a little to lose, you could lose 15 or 20 and be dehydrated when this thing is over with. So the guys all know that, and they really are in the best shape of any group of drivers I think I've ever seen in a long time. So physical fitness is a big part of being a race car driver these days. It wasn't so... We didn't think about much about it back in the day, but, man, that's part of the program now.
Well, NASCAR is back.
Like, look, it's like every sport. You know football. Look how much more athletic the players are today and how much better shape they are they're in and how they train and how they recover from injuries. And, it you know, there's so much technology now that even that we apply it to what we do as well.
Well, NASCAR is back for the Toyota Save Mart 350, June 24th through the 26th. Visit SonomaRaceway.com for tickets. He's one of the very best. Darryl Waltrip now with Fox, with Chad Joinlow at 95.7 The Game. Darryl, man, love you. Love your personality. You do a heck of a job. Thanks for taking time to join us.
No, thank you. I've enjoyed being on with you guys. I think it'll be a lot of fun out here this weekend. A lot of favorites. A.J. Allmendinger is one of the favorites. And, of course, Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch, the whole crowd. Kevin Harvick, should be a fun weekend, and they always put on a great show out here, and the racetrack does a nice game. Nice pre-race show, a lot of entertainment, a lot of things to do. It's kind of like going to a county fair, so come on out.
You got it. Darryl Waltrip, ladies and gentlemen, with Chad Joinlow on 95.7 The Game. That's a cool cat right there.
Oh, he's cool. But it's amazing, you know, 8 to 10 pounds these guys lose. That's a lot of weight to lose while you're driving. You're getting dehydrated. It's a tough physical sport, man. It's tough.
So what we're going to do right now with the race being in town this weekend, the Toyota Save Mart 350, we have the Ultimate Fan Pack, which includes the following. Two tickets for the race on Sunday, two pre-race pit and track passes, get on the track and up close to the cars and teams before they hit the road course, access for two to the NASCAR drivers meeting, and you can see all the drivers prep for the big time race from inside turn 11. So right now, caller 17, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Caller 17 will receive the Ultimate Fan Pack, including all the things that I just mentioned for the Toyota Save Mart 350 at Sonoma Raceway this weekend. Should the NFL reconsider their ban on marijuana? Two players say yes. 716, Chad, Joe, and Lowe, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
Good morning, 720. We thank you for your time, a Friday edition of Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game. And a big thanks to Darryl Waltrip for taking time to join us to talk about the big race coming up at Sonoma Raceway this weekend. Right now, two NFL players, former Raven Eugene Monroe and current Titans linebacker Derek Morgan, have come out, and they're challenging the NFL right now on their ban of marijuana for players, and they're wanting the league to reconsider and take a look at how they're handling this thing due to some of the benefits that the players could receive from the use of marijuana when it comes to injuries, especially when you look at some of the other drugs that are being prescribed by team doctors. Hey, Lo, what's your thoughts on this in terms of what these two guys are trying to do with the league moving forward?
It's interesting because I went to Denver 2 weeks ago and met with these two gentlemen, and with the doctors, the Stanley brothers. It's seven boys. I think they were 11 in their family, and had an opportunity to really sit and go through the process and the things that they're doing. And it's mind-boggling. Cal Turley was there. A lot of different guys that are advocating for using the Charlotte's Web and the different strands that they found that's helping for medicinal purposes, also for just helping with CTE, helping with inflammation. There was a huge documentary that was on CNN News, and they named the strand of the THC after this young girl, Charlotte's Web. I know the mom. She's a great lady. And it's just interesting because they're taking out the THC and they're using this stuff and they're using it as a liquid and they're giving it to children. They're giving it to adults. It helps fights against tumors. It's helped, you know, it's helped a lot, helped with CTE. It's helping a lot of these people recover, not just athletes, but kids, men, women with different ailments. UCLA is even coming up with trying to get a pill. They're doing research and all the different things about the effects that this has. So this is something that is coming. It's unmutable. It's unchangeable. It's coming. The NFL even have met with the different people with the brothers, the Stanley brothers, about Charlotte's Web and about the product and what can it do for the players. So I think that research is being done. People are getting more educated about it. The difference between marijuana, people just out there, just street marijuana, and also between hemp. Hemp is something a guy can smoke it all day and wouldn't get high. It's a difference because the THC is the thing that getting guys that are high. So I think this is a huge movement, and I see the benefits of it because I've known guys and talking to Cal Turley and all these different guys that really, really are codependent on it because of the fact it has helped them from Cal Turley using a cane to now is able to walk. From Cal Turley not being able to remember so many different things that he has talked about the benefits of using this medicinal marijuana.
I've said this before and I'll say it again. The NFL is reactive, not proactive. Reactive, not proactive. The NFL is not going to get ahead of this. The NFL is not going to come to the forefront and be advocates of this. Why? Sponsors. Money. You've got a lot of people who dump a lot of cash into your product. Can't afford to offend them. Can't afford to take a risky stance on a controversial issue because guess what happens? The money dries up. So the NFL will stay quiet and they'll let other people go through the door first. They will be reactive, not proactive. Look no further than how the Baltimore Ravens have handled this situation. Ray Rice is caught on film knocking out his wife. How long did it take for them to get rid of him? Eugene Monroe speaks out about legalization of marijuana, or at least testing procedures, getting the NFL involved in doing some research to see if it could help players, something that'd be a great PR move for the NFL because all they do now is try to cover up stuff that hurts players.
Sure.
So to go out there and find something that could help players, that could look pretty good. Eugene Monroe, cut 3 weeks later by the Ravens. Oh, no, it's not because of his stance on weed. There's not a lot he brings to the table. Okay, sure. Baltimore, you have a suspect history with how you handle controversial issues like this. I'm not willing to take you at your word. You hung on the Ray Rice longer than you hung on the Eugene Monroe. If he couldn't help you out, I have a feeling you would have dumped him a long time ago. I think the weed thing is why they got rid of him. They didn't want to be associated with another controversial issue. This is what's sad about the National Football League because the players will sell you everything from UGG boots to Cadillacs. These guys are endorsers. You buy products, you buy items, you consume because these are people you look up to. You listen to what they have to say. They can influence you. The NFL, as an entity, can influence you to buy anything from reality football to fantasy football. They're outstanding at selling. So between the league's ability to sell you items and the players' ability to sell you items, if they came together for an actual good cause, something that they could be proactive on, think about what they could accomplish. We don't look to our government or Congress to get things done because they won't work together. The NFL is so influential. Professional sports in this country in general, the players and the leagues, they've got money, they've got resources. Most importantly, they've got power and they've got clout. They could get ahead of this. They could test and they could find ways that if cannabis can be of a help to ailing players, if it could be helpful for brain damage, CTE, bad knees, arthritis, things of that nature, they could be at the forefront of this. They could do something good. And what happens if you put in the research and it doesn't work out? What's the downside? You lose a few bucks.
Right.
But they won't do it. Why? Because they don't want to lose any of those corporate sponsorships. The NFL cannot afford, in its own eyes, to align itself with something controversial. They have more power than they could possibly imagine. and they could do some real good in this country. And this spans way past the possible benefits of cannabis and how it could help you. They could do so much good in this country, but they never will because they can't jeopardize the Budweiser sponsorships, the beer sponsorships, car sponsorships. A lot of money there. Can't afford to be proactive. They'll just wait until someone else handles it, and then they'll slide in and they'll try to take credit.
Lo, 16 years in the NFL, how often did you see the team doctors and people so willing to write a prescription for pain medication?
It happens all the time. And that's what's disheartening. You see what was going on with the Vioxx and the Toradol shots and all the different things they were willing to give these guys, and knowingly it helps, it hurts the liver, the kidneys, all these different ailments that it's done. Now with this cannabis, it's a liquid. So got people, I don't want people to think, oh, these guys are, they'd all be smoking. No, they take out the THC a lot in this, and it doesn't have that. So you don't have that effect, that high effect. So it's a liquid. These are drops that these guys would be able to take that would help inflammation, help tumors, help shrink tumors. There's so much research that's being done, you know, in Denver, Colorado, and now it's legal to ship in over 25 different states. So there is a movement. There is a huge movement. And I think the medical world is understanding the benefits to taking the THC out of this stuff. So I think that you're going to see more and more of this out there.
Should the NFL reconsider their ban on marijuana? We'll revisit this conversation coming up at 8:15. How can the 49ers correct their organization mistakes moving forward? We're going to talk with former Titans executive Jeff Diamond. It's Chad, Joe, and Lowe, 728, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
732, our next guest is a former NFL Executive of the Year working with the Vikings and then went on to be the president of the Tennessee Titans. Very happy to welcome Jeff Diamond to Chad, Joe, and Lowe here on 95.7 The Game. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for coming on the show. Now, you were with the Vikings in that great 98 year when they went 15-1. I apologize for this, but Lo Neal wanted me to ask you if you remember what team beat you that season.
Well, unfortunately, it was Tampa Bay during the regular season, and I think we were 7-0 or 8-0 at the time. And first of all, even though Lo asked that question, he's one of my favorite people I ever worked with during our years at the Titans, which followed up that Vikings years, by the way, with a pretty good season in the Super Bowl. But yeah, Tampa Bay with Lorenzo Neal beat us in Tampa, and then we won the rest of the regular season games, beat Arizona in the playoffs, and then had a 10-point lead in the first half against Atlanta in the NFC Championship, a 7-point lead with 2 minutes to go. Gary Anderson missed his first field goal of the year, and Atlanta came back and beat us in overtime. That was the most disappointing loss of my NFL career, and then that was the NFC Championship, and then the next year, of course, we end up in the Super Bowl. So it's a roller coaster in the NFL. We know that. And that was never more in evidence than that, those 2 years.
Well, Jeff, we'll get to the Niners in just a moment. But serious question here in regards to a guy like Lowe. Do you think we'll ever see a time where the fullbacks like Lorenzo Neal will ever get a chance to be in the Hall of Fame?
I think there definitely should be a case for that. And I think Lowe should be one of the people that should be considered because he was a fantastic player and such a key part of our Titans Super Bowl year, blocking for Eddie George and helping to open holes and blowing up the middle of the line and just did a great job out of the backfield catching the ball. And so, yeah, I think it definitely should be a situation where fullbacks are considered. They're an integral part of the offense, even if the running back position and the fullback position has been a little devalued in recent years because of the passing game. But even still, there is a great role for the fullback, and Lowe is the best one I was ever around.
We're talking with Jeff Diamond, former executive with the Titans here on Chad, Joe, and Lowe, 95.7 The Game. Well, you were part of an SB Nation report on the 49ers listing off the four big mistakes that the team made which led to their current demise. I'll ask you this in regards to those four items. Are you surprised that the 49ers, as great as they were for a 3 to 4 year window with Harbaugh, that the decline was so rapid?
Yeah, I was to a certain extent. And I think some of the things that happened were a little bit beyond their control. And when you lose some really good players to retirement, such as Patrick Willis and Justin Smith, and then a young linebacker such as Chris Borland after one season retires due to concussion concerns, and that's totally unexpected. Anthony Davis' situation, unexpected. And then, of course, Aldon Smith was problematic from basically from his second season on. And so a lot of those things were beyond their control, but I think what was under their control was keeping a great coach in Jim Harbaugh and not having a battle of wills with Trent Baalke, the GM, and then losing him. And I think that some of the other situations in terms of Kaepernick's rise and fall perhaps could have been managed better with some better coaching. And I think the decision to go with Jim Tomsula was a mistake. And I think in retrospect, the 49ers acknowledged that and then moved on. And I think now it will be really interesting to see how Chip Kelly does and what happens to Kaepernick and how things progress. I think that hiring Chip Kelly is a good move for the 49ers. And I think that hopefully they're headed back up on the right trajectory now, but certainly the last couple of years were a major fall that happened quicker than people expected.
Well, you've been in a management position, Jeff, and thanks for all the kind words you said about me earlier, but you've been in a management position and you see things like this, you've seen these things happen, but when you hired a Tom Sula, who's a great defensive lineman, who's a great man, a great guy, we understand that, but, you know, they kind of outkicked his coverage, knew that he wasn't maybe qualified for that, never been a D.C., and then you do that, and then you go to a Kelly, who's a guy who there's a lot of question marks about him out there. Is that seem to be a safe hire? Is that just trying to push it? And what was your thought process when you seen that moving forward?
Well, I think that Chip Kelly is a quality head coach. And I think where he got in trouble in Philadelphia after two 10-win seasons was when Jeff Lurie, the owner, turned over the personnel department operation to him and gave him basically total control, and he mismanaged that. And with some of the free agent signings that they had with the trade of LeSean McCoy and some of the acquisitions that they made that turned into disasters, such as DeMarco Murray. And so I think that as a coach, Chip Kelly is a proven commodity and a very innovative, creative head coach and a smart guy. And there have been some questions perhaps on some of his inner workings with the players, but I think he'll learn from that as a professional coach. I think he's a quality head coach. I think he'll get the 49ers going in the right direction. So I thought that was a good hire for them, but I thought the Tom Sula hire was, as you said, was a disaster. And so I give them credit for acknowledging that quickly and moving on.
Former Tennessee Titans and Minnesota Vikings front office executive Jeff Diamond joining Chad, Joe, and Lowe here on 95.7 The Game. Jeff, the way everything is played out with Colin Kaepernick, picking up the option, the injuries, the way it's played out, now he's going to be sitting there behind Blaine Gabbert, presumably for week one. Do you think this is what the 49ers were hoping for last year with this scenario, or is this completely blown up in their faces?
Well, I think it is a problem, and I think Colin Kaepernick clearly is a more talented quarterback than Blaine Gabbert. And I think as time goes on and Chip Kelly has an opportunity to work with him during training camp, I think Kaepernick, I'll be surprised if he's not the opening day starter, because this is a Super Bowl quarterback, let's face it. And Blaine Gabbert is a washout with a lousy team in Jacksonville. And so, yeah, perhaps he didn't have a good supporting cast there or whatever, but I just don't see that he's the quality player that Colin Kaepernick is. And so I think that they realize that, and that's why they exercised the option. That's why they gave him his huge contract, even without significant long-term guarantees, perhaps. But even still, I think it's a really important year for Colin Kaepernick. It's an important year for the organization to get back on track. And we'll see how it all plays out. But I think that he's still the most talented quarterback on that roster, clearly to me.
Switching gears to the Oakland Raiders, let's assume that Las Vegas passes the initiative to get the funding they need to build a new stadium and have a structure in place for the Raiders in 2020. If a vote in January comes up amongst the owners about letting the Raiders go to Vegas, do you think they would have the necessary votes to pass? Would two-thirds of the owners vote yes on Oakland to Las Vegas?
I think they will, and I think that the concerns about gambling have really eased over the years with all the casino gambling around the country, and I think that the NHL has opened the door to the Las Vegas market now with their expanding to Las Vegas, so the NFL won't have to consider themselves the first pro team in, and I think if they get the stadium situation in Las Vegas where they want it to be, where it's a really bona fide first-class NFL facility that they have not been able to put forth in Oakland, then to me, it's really a no-brainer that they're going to let the team leave and go. And it's happened before where the Raiders went to L.A. and came back, and albeit it was maybe under duress from Pete Rozelle at the time with Al Davis, but even still, I would not be surprised if that happens. And what I don't think will happen is the Raiders or the Chargers to go to L.A., because to me, being the second team into a market that's been basically vacant for 20 years, and the Rams have the head start on all the sponsorship dollars, all the ticket season ticket holders, suite holders, that doesn't make sense to me. I think San Diego will get their stadium done. I think the Raiders will end up in Las Vegas.
Jeff, I want to thank you for your time. Tell the wife I said hello. You're a great man. Thanks for joining Chad, Joe, and Lo.
Hey, thank you, Lo. I always enjoy talking to you, and wish you and your family all the best. And thanks, guys. Enjoyed it today. And take care and all the best.
You got it. Jeff Diamond, former executive of the year in the NFL with the Vikings, and then went on to work with the Titans with Chad, Joe, and Lo on 95.7 The Game. It's good people. And he remembered the one team, Lo. You always remember the losses, don't you?
Yeah, he had it tough. Think about it. The year before, they go to the NFC Championship and they lose. And then the year after that, he comes with us to Tennessee, and we go to the Super Bowl and lose. So he's had 2 years pretty brutal.
We got more in the NFL coming up at 8. You know, with the Raiders' potential move, with the NFL looking at Vegas, we got more in the NFL coming up at 8 o'clock. But last night, the NBA draft, and the Warriors very active. Does the drafting of Damian Jones mean the potential end of Festus Ezeli with the Dubs? I'm going to pose that question to my guys next. 7:42, Chad, Joe, and Lo, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Chad, Joe, and Lo on 95.7 The Game.
7:46. The Warriors last night got their first selection, pick number 30 in the first round.
With the 30th pick in the 2016 NBA Draft, the Golden State Warriors select Damian Jones from Vanderbilt University.
All right, Damian Jones, a true center at 7 feet. Lo, do you think the drafting of Jones spells the end for Festus Ezeli in a Warriors uniform?
I do. I think when you look at what the Dubs have done the year before, they drafted a young man. He didn't really play this year. But they've been building for these moments. Festus is probably going to be too expensive. They're going to say, can we afford this guy? Yeah, they probably can. But they said, is he the guy? If we put this type of money in him, can he be that player that we hope that he can be? And right now, Festus hadn't shown that. Festus had crucial minutes that he could be able to play and step up in the playoffs. Didn't show up. Festus have had opportunities. This guy's not in his first, second year. He's got some years under his belt. They would like to see this guy step up and be a little bit more polished. So is he going to go to open market and people are going to pay him maybe the 12 to 15 that people are talking about? Maybe. But I don't think that this Dub team can afford to do that. So what do? They go out and address issues and needs that they need. They go out and get another young big that can work and to build into maybe the starting role in the near future in a year or two. Because your nucleus is still in place. You still have your big three. You know, you still have the Splash Brothers. You still got Draymond. You know that Bogut's getting a little older, still injury prone. So Bogut can hold on this year, and now the transition can start that process. So I like what they did by getting Jones, big kid from
Vanderbilt. So it would not surprise you if Ezeli was out based on this pick of Jones?
No, it wouldn't surprise me.
It's too far a leap to say this pick means Ezeli's out. You want to know why? It's a contingency plan. This kid's hurt. He had pectoral muscle surgery last week. Bob Myers said he won't be playing in the Las Vegas Summer League. He's not most likely going to be ready for training camp. Assume he does get healthy right before the season starts. How many minutes can you bank on? Andrew Bogut might not be ready to go at the start of the season. Bogut's not getting any younger. There's a lot of miles on those legs. You're going to need a big, and you're going to need decent minutes from a big. This guy's not ready. That's not to say he can't be a four somewhere in the future. There's a lot to like here. Damian Jones, 7 feet tall, 244 pounds out of Vanderbilt. Same place as Festus Ezeli, if you're looking for any sort of irony there. 21 years old on June 30th. That's his birthday coming up. This guy's an elite athlete, and he reminds a lot of people, Chad, you mentioned this earlier, of DeAndre Jordan. That's the ceiling.
Leaping ability.
We've also heard some comps regarding Jermaine O'Neal. Great value at 30 because a lot of people believe he fell due to inconsistencies. At Vanderbilt, he was a relatively inconsistent player. There are times he didn't show up. That's what happens with young guys as they're developing, especially at that size. Very explosive in terms of leaping ability. He's a solid shot blocker. He's a solid rebounder. And very underrated when it comes to his jump shot. The problem, as we talked about, he needs to polish up those low post moves, and he needs to get more consistent on the court. He needs to be more aggressive. That's the scouting report on Damian Jones. He's not ready to give you 15 or 20 minutes per game next season. So it's easy to say because a seven-footer's coming in, Azili's gone. This is simply the Warriors and Bob Myers saying, look, we might not have Festus Azili next year. We need to think about the future. We need to think about plan B. Why deal with it down the road when you can deal with it now?
Yeah.
It's a team being proactive. It's a smart business move. It looks like the guy comes at a good value. Again, you're not going to have him in the summer league. He's going to be behind schedule, so you're not going to expect a lot of minutes from him early in the season. Maybe he develops, and down the road, when Bogut's gone and possibly Azili's gone as well, this guy steps in to fill that void.
Yeah, I agree with you on the contingency plan, and I always think back to what Pat Riley used to always preach, and that's wide bodies. You can never have too many of them. So whether Festus comes back or not, you've got Jones, but they're going to go out and sign one or two more veteran bigs to bring in off the bench because you need those type of wide bodies as you get into the playoffs, guys who can come in and give you that 5 to 10 minutes a game to a pound and pick up some fouls.
This team is not going to pay Festus $15 million a year. You can't. You cannot pay a guy that is underachieved like that. You got to let someone else take that
burden. No, I agree, but if you're not going to give Festus the money, they're going to go out and sign a couple other veteran bigs.
No, I agree both of you guys. This is a contingency plan. Now, Festus can come back for a bargain. Festus can come back if it's, 9 or 10 million. They're not going to overpay this guy because they don't. She's shown right now. Why would they? For what?
No,
now,
the problem with the NBA is there's always going to be some, team out there, some jabroni that's going to be willing to overpay for a guy like Festus.
Sure.
Bigs always get, centers especially always seem to get overpaid in the NBA.
Yeah.
Just look no further than Bob Myers' quotes regarding Patrick McCall, the 38th overall selection, who the Warriors paid Milwaukee $2.4 million to acquire, and Damian Jones. This is Bob Myers after the draft. Neither is ready to play meaningful minutes.
Right.
So you can make all the leaps you want on Festus Azili. You can make all the leaps you want on anyone else on the roster. Just understand that these two individuals coming in need to develop.
Sure.
In McCaw's case, he's got to put weight on that body. He's 6'7", 180 pounds. Now, he's going to be ready for the summer league in Las Vegas. And he should have some success down there because he played basketball in Las Vegas. He's not going to need to worry about acclimating to the environment. He should be able to hit the court and hit the court running. The guy is a great passer. He's an emerging shooter, and he's known as a defender who can cover multiple positions. That's the upside. But he's got to add strength, he's got to bulk up, and he's got to work on his offense a little bit. Both guys are projects. Both guys are projects. And that's what you're going to get with the 30th overall selection and the 38th overall selection. But credit Myers for understanding he had value there. At 38, the Warriors did not have a second-round pick. So they spent $2.4 million to Milwaukee in order to acquire the rights to Patrick McCall at UNLV. This is a guy a lot of people thought could be in the first round. He slipped. The Warriors feel that that's value. Now you've got some youth that you can plug into the pipeline and hopefully develop. But again, do not expect either guy to be a significant player early in the season.
Sure.
So if Azili leaves, you still need to address that via free agency.
Oh, yeah.
752, Chad Joe and Lowe, 95.7 the game. We're taking a look at what the Warriors were able to do last night in the NBA draft. Speaking of Bob Myers, here's his take on center from Vandy, Damian Jones.
We're excited about the players we were able to draft. We got two players with good value in Damian Jones and Patrick McCall, both athletic, both young. Damian Jones is a center, shot blocker, great size and strength in the post, finishes at the rim.
That's Bob Myers on Damian Jones.
You needed to. I mean, you think about it. This year we talked about it all during the playoffs. We talked about the regular season. This is one of the most prolific three-point shooting teams we've ever seen. They've broken every record imaginable, man. But what was one of their downfalls? Rebounding. This team, rebounding. Rebounding, rebounding, rebound has hurt this Warriors team and hurt them in crucial moments. You had guys out-rebounding. You had teams that were getting out-rebounding 2-1. It was unbelievable. You had a guy, Tristan Thompson, dominated. Other guys dominated against them. They had to address a need that they really that was pressing them, especially when you have such a prolific shooting. You have to go out and do this. And I think they did a good job addressing the needs that were moving forward.
Lesser-known players, and rightfully so. That's what happens at the end of the NBA draft. But for teams picking at the beginning of the draft, you recognize some of those names. I'll tell you what right now, we talked about it before. I've liked this team for a few months now, and I think last night they got a hell of a lot better, the Minnesota Timberwolves. Chris Dunn slid to them at 5, the point guard out of Providence. This starting 5 next year, damn, son. Chris Dunn, Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Zach LaVine. And what's the one knock against these guys? They're not experienced.
Young.
They need to be developed. So you bring in Tom Thibodeau, a guy who's been around the block. He's worked with vets. He's worked with divas. He's worked with young guys. He's worked with developmental projects. He's been to the postseason. He's had success. He's had failure. He's been around the block. This Minnesota team is 40-1 to win the title next year. I would play that strictly for an opportunity to hedge against them in the playoffs, because I don't think they're going to win the NBA championship, but I do think they make the playoffs. And I think once they make the playoffs, their odds come in lower than 40-1. So you have an opportunity to bet against them in the playoffs and turn yourself a profit. That being said, 2 to 3 years from now, this is what Golden State needs to be looking at. It's easy to say LeBron in Cleveland, Durant if he's back with Oklahoma City, the rise in Portland, the San Antonio Spurs. Yeah, those are the known evils. Everybody on earth can point to the Spurs and Cleveland and OKC and say these teams are going to be problems. These teams are top-notch competition for the Warriors. The true test as an evaluator, as an executive, is to look into the future and project who you're going to be running into 2, 3, 4 years from now. What are the obstacles going to be? That's what makes the New England Patriots such a great franchise. They understand the value of staying power. They understand the value of staying ahead of the curve. Other teams are always chasing their tail, trying to look up at New England, while the Patriots are looking for the next big thing, the next innovation in football. For the Warriors and Bob Myers, yes, the clear and present danger is OKC and Cleveland. But in the future, this right here, the Minnesota Timberwolves, that's the team you better be watching.
The addition of Dunn could mean that Ricky Rubio is going to be on his way out of Minnesota. And when you talk about matches, Thibodeau is probably the best defensive coach in the NBA. Tough. Dunn fits that, man. The guy can get after it. He can defend on the ball.
And you can
he's going to work hard for Coach Tibbs.
And Tibbs is a guy, just like you guys are alluding to, a coach that's been around, but a coach that is non-nonsense, that's going to get after it. And when you got a coach like that, you want him to mature your young talent. This is the best situation these young men could ask for, by having a coach that's no nonsense, that can push young guys, especially young guys that's been out of college, only been in the league for a while, early in their career. You have a chance to mold them and teach them how to be pros for the future.
Sadly, whereas Minnesota is gearing themselves up for the next 3, 5, 8, 10 years, you got the Sacramento Kings just flailing away in the wind, figuring out ways to take good guys like Marquise Chris at number 8 and then trade them and end up with a Greek that sent Boogie Cousins right to Twitter reacting to this. You got another center, Georgios Papagiannis. And no one knows what to make of it.
The Kings.
The guy you drafted at 8, you were good there. You were good there. Marquise Chris, you're good. That's a good pick. Then you ship him away for a couple guys where it's like, not so good.
It's the same team that spent a first-round pick on Jimmer Fredette. They could have had Damian Lillard.
Poor Boogie, man.
Yeah.
Poor Boogie. But I'll say this. Jaylen Brown going 3. California has had a hell of a couple months. Jared Goff 1 to Los Angeles. Jaylen Brown 3 to the Boston Celtics with Brad Stevens at university. Give him some credit. It's been a big couple months for them in the big sports programs.
Talk about synergy. Rana Dive going in one direction. Vlade Divac going in another direction. And look at that whole debacle they went through with George Karl last year. Ugh. Mess.
Got to get yourself organized.
Yeah, you do.
We got more on the NBA and the draft coming up at 9. Now, has the NHL moving to Las Vegas helped the Raiders' chances of relocation? One former executive thinks so. 757, Chad Jones, 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.